Doc Rivers continues to time and time again not get it when it comes to getting... Oh! Let him play!
You bet one bone to win 19. What site do you use where you can actually bet $1?
They let you do 50-cent bets.
Oh my goodness, Greg.
Yeah, literally, like, he dropped Superman down, like, the drain, comes out, like, God damn it, Superman. I don't know, honey. I don't know where he got that from.
From Los Angeles, this is Dave in the City.
Part of the DITCOW Sports Network.
Now, here's Dave Medina.
Good evening, sports fans, and a pleasure to have you here for the big football show. From the Dave in the City studios at the home of champions, Southern California. A couple notes before we start our divisional round NFL preview. Big news in the last few weeks, and really sad news on Friday when Dodgers legend Tommy Lasorda died at the age of 93. That one rocked L.A. for a good couple days, and still is, really. I mean, he was as big a part of the Dodgers as the Dodgers themselves. He was huge. I think I texted Yachts, like, the day it happened, that I said Tommy Lasorda is the Dodgers. Like, he was all over that team. He managed the team for 20 years, won two World Series with the Dodgers, won Manager of the Year two times with them. But beyond just what he did as a manager, what he represented as a person, and he was a character. I mean, man, he lived a long time. Got to give it to him. I mean, what a life. What a life. And it's sad that he's gone. So big news for baseball, big loss for baseball and the Dodgers, clearly. Also big news just happened this afternoon, a four-team trade by the Rockets, Nets, Cavs, and I think the other team was the Pacers, to send James Harden, the malcontent, to Brooklyn to play alongside other malcontent, Kyrie Irving and Sensitive Sally in the name of Kevin Durant. So that is going to be some team. And I think Andy will have thoughts on that over the next few days, if not tonight. But James Harden moves over to Brooklyn, and good riddance to him. I mean, he just foobarred and torpedoed the entire Rockets organization, and he put no effort into his offseason. It's nobody's going to root for that guy except the Nets fan, and maybe not even the Nets fans are going to root for him at this point. So that's the latest. And tonight we can move into football. And we introduced our panel. Let's talk to our friends tonight. We'll start with John in Connecticut. John, welcome back. How's it going tonight?
Doing well, Dave. Thanks for having us back on. Yeah, super wild card weekend. It was a lot of fun. Like we talked about, I think, you're kind of a little hesitant at first to add an extra playoff team, but it definitely, get the triple headers each day. It was definitely worth it. And, we've got all sorts of other sports going on. Hockey's back tonight. Get a little action on that in the mix. So. Mm-hmm. Some good times indeed, in the midst of all of the craziness that's going on. So good to get down and talk about some sports.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is just a little figment of it, a fraction of the entire sports world, which is fun. College basketball, too. A lot of interesting juice there. Andy in Seattle joins us from a different location tonight. Andy, how's it going tonight?
Yeah. Oh, hanging out in the La Quinta Inn, room 217. As we find out who's been shitting in my bathroom and taking my toilet paper. I mean, I get it. If you got to go, you got to go. But the painters have taken, like, every roll of toilet paper and the paper towel. So here we are. The Harden trade is not worth anyone's breath right now. So I will not be talking about it because we want to talk about the NFL. And other stuff. The NHL schedule, I read about it today. So, like, how did, like, St. Louis, they're the team that gets kind of screwed because they play all the West teams and all the Canada teams play each other. And, yeah, so, like, the Bruins will play the same 8 teams all year round. I don't know. Obviously, we'll get into it. I missed the window to gamble on it today, but we'll sprinkle it in there. Right now, as we mourn the loss of college pigskin, we're just taking college basketball for now. I can't get into the NBA right now on the heels of the Nets drama.
Yeah, but big night on Monday for your Alabama Crimson Tide. Any thoughts on the college championship?
If we want to do a roundtable on the college championship game to kind of put the bow on the season. I'm sure you guys have thoughts on it too.
Yep.
You know, I'm still bitter that Alabama didn't cover against Notre Dame, but if you watch the game, you saw Notre Dame kind of use up a lot of play clock while they are running plays on offense. You know, Alabama only ran 50 plays on offense. They usually run like 70 to 75. We saw Brian Kelly send out the punt team when they were up, when they were down like 24 or 27 points or whatever, maybe 24 points, and they called timeout, and then they converted that 4th and 8. So, yeah, Alabama in that second half against Notre Dame, they didn't have to do much. They were so explosive that first quarter. But tying that to the game on Monday against Ohio State was they were trying to run fast offense, even though they weren't scoring as fast as Alabama and they weren't stopping Alabama. They were content to beat Alabama or lose to Alabama by doing what they thought was the best way to beat them with offense. And they didn't slow roll it. They didn't slow play it like Notre Dame tried to do. So Alabama took advantage of it because they could get Ohio State off the field more than Ohio State could get Alabama off the field. That one fumble gave Ohio State some life in that, you know, the beginning of the second quarter or end of the – no, yeah, I think it was the beginning of the second quarter when Alabama was up 14-7 and Mac Jones fumbled. But by the end of the second quarter, Alabama was doing their thing. They scored basically right before the half, and they got the ball to start the third quarter, that, you know, the double-edged situation. And great season for Saban. You know, he adapted. There's too much offense in college football. That's an argument we could have for another day, but there's just not enough skilled players on the defense top to bottom across the country to stop these high profile, high caliber offensive teams. You know, you're not very few teams, you know, outside the Big Ten are really trying to win with, you know, ground and pound. There's too many skilled players at Alabama. You could argue how he does it, but, you know, he's got pros. He's got pros top to bottom, wide receivers and running backs, and he's got a really good defense. But even the really good defense at Alabama, they can get scored upon now because there's such an emphasis on offense. And so, you know, we could talk about this season. I talked to John about this off the program. Like, there's a bunch of schools where you're like, well, what was the point of that? Like, you ask Mississippi State, what was the point of Mississippi State going whatever they did so they could get a brawl against Tulsa in their bowl game? Like, that nobody watched, like, in person, or maybe a few people. Or you could ask a lot of, like, Herm Edwards, what was the point of Herm Edwards' season so they could lose and – or they could – I think they won their last game at Oregon State in a horrendous rainstorm. But, you know, for teams like Alabama, Ohio State, Notre Dame, and Clemson, you know, it was probably as close to a normal season for them. But a lot of the schools that, like, didn't get to a bowl game, opted out of a bowl game, had their bowl games canceled, it was like, well, what was the point? But for us, we got to gamble about it. We got to talk about it. So I hope next year is a little more normal, bring the pageantry back, get like a real bowl season that starts in the middle of December.
Yeah.
But we'll see.
Get a real Rose Bowl that actually takes place at the actual Rose Bowl too. That
Yes, great. That's a great point.
That was too weird, man. I just couldn't wrap myself into that. You know, we'll keep staying on the topic of college football for a bit, John. Let's get your recap too of the national championship and all the bowl scenarios that went with it.
Yeah, Dave, we talked about a lot of the bowls last week because mm-hmm. everything was done except for the championship. But yeah, I'll echo what Andy said. It's just, you know, some of the schools, what they ended up playing, like 3 games, 4 games. I mean, it just, you know, you read some of the, I read some stories that the kids, they didn't, the reason why they opted out of the bowl season, a lot of these teams, is because basically they were isolated from their friends and family since like the end of August when they started doing training camp. Even if the conferences themselves didn't play, they still were like practicing and, you know, needed to stay away from the general population. So basically they were just with themselves, like doing nothing but focused on football, basically. And I'm sure they did virtual classes too. You know, some schools maybe not, but for the most part, like they were just completely isolated for what, 6 months, and they just couldn't. You know, what's the point of playing in the, you know, the Duke's Mayo Bowl at that point? That's another thing. They promised to dump the mayo on the coach that won, and we waited the whole game for that to happen, and then they just end up dumping Gatorade. Like, talk about false advertising.
Oh, that
was really disappointing. Absolutely. You know, like the potato bowl, they dumped the potatoes on the guy. There's another bowl, they dumped what, French fries. I forget which one that was.
Well, that was a potato bowl too, right? The fries.
The potatoes were the French fries. There was another game where they dumped something else on the coach.
Cheez-Its. Yes,
Cheez-It that's right. Bowl. The Cheez-It bowl. Yep, the Cheez-Its. Yeah, Miami. Ugh, that was awful. another one of my close bowl picks. Could have won it, but in any event, the mayo, they need to dump that guy with some mayo.
Exactly.
You know? I mean, if Sean Payton, you see him get slimed the other day after the Nickelodeon game, which was pretty cool. I won't get to that, I guess, later, but that was pretty neat. But, hoping for next year that, you know, none of us can make any predictions about where things are going to be with COVID at that point. But hopefully, I mean, God willing, that we're back to somewhat of a, you know, we're going to get back to a season where we can start on Labor Day weekend with every team playing, have some fans in the stands. Even if there's no fans in the stands next year, honestly, like every time I see a clip now of like an old game with like hundreds of thousands of people, I'm like, oh my God, like what are all those people doing there in the it's so bizarre now. Like we're just so conditioned to watching something with no fans at this point. Like honestly, it wouldn't bother me if fans didn't come back. Obviously for, you know, betting purposes and whatnot, you'd have to recalibrate. But in terms of like watching the game, it just doesn't make a difference anymore. But anyway, so I hope we're back to that scenario next fall, where we have an on-time start. Every team's playing. We get some non-conference games. I'm sure, obviously, COVID will still be around and there'll be some issues here and there. But it should be a much smoother season. And then we can get a full bowl season where we have like 40-something games instead of the kind of diluted, 25, what we got this year, 26. So, as in terms of the championship game, I mean, what else can you say? I mean, you know, the transformation that Alabama made, like just go back to, I'm going to say 2012, maybe 2013. They were the team that played that ground and pound defense kind of game. Remember the game of the year or the game of the century, LSU Alabama in 2011, I think. Where did that game end? Like 10-7. Like it was just that was just how they played. And then as college football started moving towards like the spread offenses and motion and, you know, the up tempo, like Saban had to evolve and give him credit. Like he did. And he recruited those kind of athletes. And, you know, you see the unbelievable numbers that he's been putting up the last couple of years, or the last, you know, 5-6 years with the players. And the proof is, you know, again, with like the guys he sends to the NFL, all the receivers and running backs are first round picks. I mean, Mac Jones is probably going to be a first round pick. I don't know if he's, you know, if he's worth a first round pick, but it's probably going to be a first round pick quarterback. So, this is probably this might be one of his, very likely is one of his best teams there. I mean, they played an all SEC schedule, regardless of what you say about the SEC. I mean, the bottom was pretty bad, but they played 10 SEC games and they legit were never challenged in any of the games. The championship game, I know it was kind of close there at the end versus Florida, but they were never really in danger of losing that game. So it was just a dominant year, and they capped it off and, how they spent the entire season. Just, you know, Ohio State kind of had a chance there. They matched them for a first couple scores, but over the course of the game, you're just not going to be able to match them for, you know, 50 points like that. And I think Ryan Day made a mistake. I forget what the score was. It might've been 28-14, and he kicked a field goal, and that just completely just took some air out of them. You know, they needed to score touchdowns. They could not kick field goals there. And I think he punted one time, like on the 50-yard line, like you know, we'll get into some punts, I'm sure, with some of these NFL coaches. But, yeah, you just can't punt in that spot when you have the weapons that Alabama has on the other side. So, you know, it was kind of a fitting end to the season. I mean, they dominated all year. And, you know, no one can claim that, like, it was an asterisk because of COVID or whatever. They were the best team, and they deserved to win. So it kind of wrapped up the season nicely.
It definitely it did. And I think there's a good finality to it. It was decisive, and you know, normally I don't like blowout games, but I think Alabama earned that because they really were great, and there's just no questions asked with this team this year, and it's really funny that LSU, for as dominant as they were a year ago, everybody forgot about them. That's just how good this Alabama team was. They have like two amazing wide receivers. Jalen Waddle didn't even play most of the second half because he wrecked his ankle on a kickoff against Tennessee, but Devontae Smith takes over and then wins the Heisman Trophy, and then people are rumbling, oh, it's going to be a Heisman mush. He ends up catching, how many touchdowns was it, Andy? Like four touchdowns, five touchdowns in the first half? It was incredible.
Oh, I think it was three.
Oh, it was three, okay.
Yeah. I mean, they had some great plays, too. Give Sark some credit. I mean, like, you know, that one play where, like, they had motion in one direction and then he goes on the other side, like, wide open out of the backfield. I mean, that was great. So, well, you know, good job by him.
Yeah, pretty good job because, you already know that Sark is now the coach of the University of Texas. So you thought maybe, you know, people thought that maybe he wouldn't put a great effort. No, he did a good job. I think his effort was just fine in that game. He coached very well. So that's it for college. Let's go to the NFL. And look at what truly was a super wild card weekend. And John alluded to the Nickelodeon broadcast during the worst game on the schedule, easily, the Bears-Saints game. So that's probably the telecast that needed it the most because that game was garbage. I don't know, God's honest truth, I was very close to falling asleep, but I think the Nickelodeon telecast saved that game because it was a good telecast.
We had the golf on during that time, that game, Dave, so you could have put that on. You know, I had... was more interested in that than the Saints Bears, you know.
Yeah, and that was a good tournament. I mean, the Century Tournament of Champions came down to playoff, and then is it Harris English? I'm trying to remember.
Yeah, Harris English beat Neiman in a playoff.
Yeah, it's a good finish.
Juice. Golf Central was like, oh my God, why isn't Neiman warming up? He's sitting there on the bench with Sergio, eating and chatting it up and having a good time. Like, if there's only like a golf show where people would call in, I can only imagine the callers, like, you know, calling into Mike, expressing outrage of Joaquin Neiman not warming up before the playoff. That's why he lost, Mike. He doesn't take it seriously.
It's too bad for him. I mean, he was doing fine until he hit that ball, and they thought that he saved it, but then it went in this like 3-foot rough off the hole or off the green. It was like, dude, how are you going to hit it out of that? And he had no chance after that. So, good stuff. Okay, so let's get to the NFL recap, and let's go back to Andy, and let's get your thoughts on last week's action.
Yeah, thanks, Dave. It's great because you guys have better attention spans than I do, but like week 1 to week 17 in the NFL, when there's like 7 games on at 10 a.m. out here, and then 3 on in the afternoon, and I'm gambling on almost all of them. It's like I got them all. When you're watching like 5 games at once, you're kind of like watching 0 game at once. So this Sunday and Saturday, it was great to just kind of watch one game on at a time and be able to retain some of the stuff. So that first game, you know, Buffalo and Indianapolis, my God, Indianapolis must still be regretting that first half, because as you all know, there's no way they should have been losing at halftime. And gosh darn it, Frank Wright. I mean, Frank Wright did his best Jim Caldwell impression, just not taking advantage of that first half. I mean, just the field position difference. I feel like every time Indianapolis started the drive, especially in the first half, they were almost at midfield. Every time Buffalo started the drive, they were basically pinned back in their own territory. So, you know, you could argue all you want at the end of that first half when, you know, they went for it on fourth down, and instead of taking the field goal, and you see Phil Rivers throwing off his back foot from the 20-yard line, like, they should have probably scored on the third down play beforehand. Then they wouldn't have been in that mess to begin with. And then in the second half, I was driving in the car when the challenge went down on that Pascal fumble that was a fumble, but they didn't call. And I don't know who was the color guy on Westwood One. I think it was Kevin Harlan doing the play-by-play, but I don't know if it was Kurt Warner or Jason Taylor, but he was saying, like, Greg McDermott just called the best timeout in the history of timeouts. And they obviously didn't get the review right, but it didn't matter anyway, because, you know, Rivers in that 2-minute offense, like, didn't work out very well, and he couldn't reach the end zone for that Hail Mary, that last play. So, I mean, there's different ways to break down that game. Like, kudos Indianapolis for coming back down 14 in the fourth quarter, but arguably they shouldn't have been in that position, because they should have had, you know, anywhere from a 4 to 10 point lead in that first half, because Buffalo started that game tight as a drum and Indianapolis could not take advantage of it due to questionable play calling. They dropped some interceptions, just bad clock management, stuff that you can't get away with in the playoffs. If you want to win, you need to be complete, and they weren't complete. So Frank Wright's got to look long and hard, and be a long off season for them. Maybe Phil Rivers goes out, but long term, I think it was also good that Buffalo wins, because I don't think Indianapolis was going to, you know, flirt with getting to a conference championship or a Super Bowl. Buffalo can. We'll talk about that Buffalo-Baltimore game down the road. I think that's going to be a great game. Seahawks-Rams. John called it. We all kind of, you know, don't know what to make of Seattle. And I should have trusted my first instinct. I liked the Rams. They always play close games against Seattle. And last minute, I was like, well, if I don't want – I was watching the game with Seahawk buddies, and I changed my mind. I was like, just take the Seahawks. And my goodness, that pick six, Metcalf threw a tantrum, and they were like, all right, let's throw the screen to just kind of get him the ball, get him involved. And it was like – Wilson didn't – it wasn't like the longest throw in the world, but it was a lot of – you know, in terms of like passes, in terms of wide receiver screens, the ball did go a decent amount of distance. But Darius Williams read that. They must have ran that play a few times the previous couple times they played. And once that happened, it was bad. The other haunting sequence was, you know, Seattle did respond, but – then they gave up a touchdown right before halftime. They had 3rd and 9, and then they gave up a big pass play to Kupp, and then they let the Rams score a touchdown before halftime. Like, it's not a big time. That's not a big time stand by that defense. Defense played pretty well. It was their offense that held them back. The other haunting sequence was they got stuffed on 3rd and 1. They were down 7. And then they were going for it on 4th and 1. There was an injury timeout. The play clock didn't reset. I'm like, they better realize the play clock didn't reset. There's still 22 seconds left, so they should still be all right. And my God, I feel like it happened way too often for a professional team. They didn't realize the play clock, like, didn't reset. They get a false start because they're trying to hurry up, and it's 4th and 6, and they end up punting the ball. I'm like, that's just atrocious. Another haunting sequence was when they muffed the punt. Just bad mistakes by the Seahawks. Just a tale of two halves. Their offense regressed. Their defense improved throughout the season. They let Jared Goff, his throws were inaccurate, which is expected with the gimpy thumb, but that's a bad loss for Seattle. I don't have much to say about the Tampa-Washington game. You guys can talk about that, but the backup quarterback played well. So to tie that into the Bears-Saints game, like, if you're a Bears fan, you gotta be sick to your stomach. We knew that was haunting when Trubisky might have thrown the best throw in his career, only for it to get dropped.
Got dropped!
Like, the best throw he's ever made in his life in the NFL gets dropped. So you see the Bears defense did all they could against the Saints. I think Brees threw 2 interceptions. You know, the Bears did all they could defensively to give the team a fighting chance. But the Bears offense was so bad. So you see the Bears offense just struggle in this day and age when teams are going up and down the field, when a quarterback by the name of Taylor Heineke is able to go up and down the field against Tampa. And then you see Trubisky just struggle to move the ball, third and long, and you're throwing it well, well before the first down markers. Just like, you got to change who you are fundamentally. And I don't think they – I think they're bringing everyone back next year. So just a bad game. That first game on that Sunday morning was very juicy between Baltimore and whatchamacallit. Baltimore and Tennessee. Vrabel got tight. Mm-hmm. Vrabel got tight. I mean, what are you doing? Like fourth and two? That whole play sequence was bad because they had second and two. We're talking about his decision to punt rather than go for it on fourth down with about 5 minutes left in the game. But you had second and two with – I know Derrick Henry wasn't good, but that's the whole point of Derrick Henry is any play he can break out a long run, especially in the late moments of the game when the defense tied. You had second and two, and you're throwing, like, deep passes with Tannehill, and then you punt on fourth and two. And but, you know, kudos to Baltimore because they're down 10-0. They're not a team that is usually historically equipped to come back. They're kind of a bully team. They love to get out in front and go out early, and then they can, you know, they hang on or they extend their lead. But, you know, Lamar, you know, classic Lamar game, had a great long run, made some big throws. So great job out of Baltimore and Tennessee. Yeah, Vrabel, you coward. Coward. But their defense actually played better than I thought they'd play because, you know, they've been kind of a laughing stock. And Dave, I'll let you talk about the Steelers.
Wow. Oh, boy.
That was just, I mean, credit to Cleveland, but you cannot start the game going down 28-0.
Yeah.
In that first fumble, like, why didn't they have more urgency to knock it out of the end zone and be down 2-0. That's what they should have done. I mean, that was straight out of the MAC. Straight out of the MAC conference, that first play. Windy game on a Wednesday in November, and you see a bash fumble into the end zone. Boom.
You know, Andy, that reminded me of Super Bowl, whatever the one that was, but I had Denver and Seattle.
Yeah.
First play was a safety.
Yep. Just brought back flashbacks to that, but you're right.
I don't watch like the hot take shows or whatever, but I can't imagine that Ben is like getting skewered. Like, you remember Cam Newton in the Super Bowl had a same kind of play where it wasn't by the goal line, but there was a fumble that he could have like dove on and he didn't get on it. And like the media just destroyed him. Like, I haven't seen anybody getting on Ben. I could be wrong, but like, he stood there like just a huge oaf and just like looked at his teammate to try to pick up the ball, at least kick it into the end zone for a safety, you know? Like, yeah. They just get like the whole tone of the game was set from that point.
Absolutely. Like, you know, you might think that people make too much of like the first play of the game. I don't agree. I think that really, really kicked them in the shins, and it was just never going to be. I mean, they tried in the second half. You saw that. But when they fell behind 28-0 in the first quarter. And, like, three of the touchdowns were the direct result of Ben Roethlisberger and something stupid that he did. He threw an interception twice. I think he had a fumble. And then you mentioned the snap at the beginning of the game. I mean, you know, certainly you have to give some of the blame to Marquise Pouncey, too. But, I mean, this is just – oh, go ahead, Andy.
I was going to say, so Tomlin goes for two when they're down 35-16.
Yeah.
Doesn't go for two to make it an 11-point game. I mean, it's just like you're oh man, right?
That was just absolutely brutal. Like,
he's like the definition of a guy like coaching with his gut. Like, he does not use any sort of like logic or charts or like, all right, what's the book say? Like, he just does whatever the hell he feels like, basically.
Yeah. Just a bad matchup for that kind of team. And for a team that started 11-0, but started the show like flaws, even during the 11-0, a team that really had problems on offense, a team that had Roethlisberger just failed to get a ball thrown sharply more than 8 yards. Even the completions looked so weak. Like, you could see the ball kind of taking an arc. Like, he had no zip on his passes. I really think that you can stick a fork in his career. He just looks terrible. and it seems like the game was nothing. It was if at the beginning, I would say just a referendum on where he is in his career. He's done. Like I just don't see him doing much. The problem is they owe him like all these dollars. They owe him like millions and millions of dollars. I mean, the Steelers are going to be in a tough place for a couple years. Like I don't know how they're going to get out of that one. So it was a fitting end, but god damn, 28-0 in the first quarter. I mean, Browns fans they weren't completely confident, but still, that was an incredible historic win for them. Like the Cleveland fans must have felt like a big weight has been lifted. And Andy, you know, we've all talked about how the Browns have to do something to prove they're not the Browns anymore. Do you feel what's your takeaway on that on their side?
I mean, they've at least for this year, they've proven they're not the Browns this year. They're coming on strong at the right time. I obviously did not expect Pittsburgh to lose. I expected, you know, because the Browns defense is a liability. I'm still not a big fan of Baker Mayfield. I respect their running game, obviously. And, you know, Cody Parker is a joke. But here's the thing. I guess we got to give a lot of credit to Stefanski because the team is not that different than when Freddie Kitchens was there. So, you know, Freddie Kitchens is just a complete buffoon. And Stefanski was able to kind of straighten out that team, you know, all three phases. And, yeah, they took advantage of an ill-prepared Pittsburgh team.
Yeah, they really were, too. I mean, it just seemed like they took that as a given that they were going to win the game. They look at the news reports that the Browns have to shut down the practice facility multiple times throughout the week, you know, to go along with the times they didn't shut it down last week. And you just can't do that in the NFL and in the playoffs. And, you know, really, the Steelers have had too many of these losses lately. They had a loss like that to the Jaguars. They had another one to... Who was the last loss before that one in 2017 that they lost to somebody? I forgot. But I mean, too much of this. I really think that it's. I think that after a while, I think that Ben and Mike Tomlin have gotten a little comfortable with their employment because it just seems like the urgency was not there. It wasn't there against Washington a few weeks ago. It wasn't there. In the week, whenever they played Buffalo, it wasn't there then either. So I honestly, everybody was right. I mean, I was buying into them early, but in the last month, I just felt like this is not going to be a serious playoff contender. And this is how it ends. I mean, I didn't think it'd end like this, but you definitely didn't think that they were going to make it the Super Bowl after the way they've been playing. So they can't run the ball. They got a lot of problems. It's going to
They're stale. Like you said, there's like, I think Tomlin is probably still like at least a top, if you, you know, whatever, a top third of the, you know, of the coaches in the league. I'd like to, you know, I'm sure if he gets a fresh start with a new team, because shit gets stale, you know, sports. A great coach, you still get stale. You can get stale at places. So, it'd be curious and interesting to see, you know, I don't think they're going to get rid of Tomlin though, but like if and when Tomlin, you know, if he goes to a new team or he gets like a fresh roster with the Steelers to see what happens because it's time to break up the band.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you can keep the receivers, right? There's some great receivers, but it is free agency time for Juju, I believe. So there are going to be a lot of free agents this offseason. It's a good opportunity. I don't know how they would do it, but if they could move from Ben somehow and trade him to some stupid team like the Jets or somebody like that, are you dumb enough to try that trade? Maybe try that, but obviously the odds of that are not very good. So, John, let's stay on the Steeler game. Did you have any additional thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, you know, for even after how bad it started, like they were right in the game in the fourth quarter. And of course, Dave, you know what I want to bring up? Why is he punting on fourth and two? Like they literally had just gone up and down the field two or three straight drives.
I can't believe they did that.
the Browns are missing like their secondary. I mean, they were clearly got past their slow start and were in a rhythm with their passing game. And he's going to punt like from basically midfield on 4th and 2.
I couldn't.
35-23. Like, what are you doing?
After all of that, right? Like, he's like, we're going to
all the way back. Like, if they had scored there and made it 35-30, they could have won that game. Like,
yeah.
You know, and then instead, like, the Browns are in the end zone and like 4 plays after the punt and the game's over. So,
yeah.
That was terrible. And then, you know, it wasn't as bad in the first half, but he punted down 28-0 on the 40-yard line. I mean, at that point, whatever, you know, but that one in the fourth quarter was really, really bad. So,
yeah,
you know, I think we covered it, mm-hmm. You know, you guys covered it pretty well. It's just, the Browns are ready to play. Like we talked about it last week. I'll give them all the credit in the world because I did not think that they would be able to have like an effective game plan or, you know, just be ready to play without Stefanski there. We've seen through this whole COVID situation, teams missing their coaches has been a huge impact. And, you know, they showed up ready and give them all the credit. So, you know, mm-hmm. Browns, they're, I'm not going to be like Trent Dilfer, watch out for the Browns.
No. I'll get to that later too.
No, I don't know if I want to go that far, but, you know, give them credit. Like they're not like a joke in the NFL anymore. Like they're a playoff caliber team. So,
yeah.
You know, we can at least say that about them. And you're right. Yeah. It's a huge monkey off their back to kind of get this, mm-hmm. this playoff win. And, you know, we'll see where they go from here, but, you know, I'll give them just a ton of credit for being, you would have told me like before the game and I didn't know anything, you would have thought the Steelers were the team that like had COVID all week and were unprepared to play because they just look awful. And Ben looked completely disinterested. Like, you know, no one's trading for him. That's for sure. I mean, but see, you're right. Like they owe him a lot of money, so they can't, I don't think they can cut him either. So they're basically at his mercy to like whether he wants to play again or not, like if he's going to retire or not. So it's a dicey situation, but you want me to touch on the other games?
Yes, but let me just make the point on the punt that Chris Collinsworth first guessed that. And I got to give him credit for that because he was killing the Steelers when they did that. And then right after the Browns scored the touchdown, he said they let them breathe. And I completely agree with him. Okay, I'll give it to you for the other recap.
Yeah. You know, the first game, I mean, if you look at the stats, the Colts, I think they had like 470-something yards of offense. They didn't turn the ball over. And, you know, they had just a number of first downs. They were efficient, and they somehow lost the game. It was just, you know, just really a tough walk. That sequence right at the end of the half that Andy was documenting was a huge swing. And, you know, just the Bills made enough plays when it mattered and pulled it out. And then, you know, they really could have gotten screwed there by that play that should have been a fumble by the Colts at the end of the game, and they ruled him down. So if the Colts had ended up winning after that, I mean, there might have been riots in Buffalo after if that had stood and, you know, the Colts ended up winning. But, you know, it was a great game, and, you know, the Colts really should feel like they let one definitely slip away there. And, you know, the Bills move on, so it's survived in advance at this point, so they'll take it for sure. Yeah, the Seahawks and Rams, you know, we've talked about this when these two teams have had matchups before. The Rams just have, like, the perfect defense against the Seahawks. Their defensive line gets after them. The way they play their cover scheme, it just really just shuts down the Seahawks. And the Seahawks' offensive line is not very good, as we've talked about. And, you know, and the Seahawks really, from, like, the middle of the season, they completely flipped their offensive game plan. They went from, like, you know, they're letting Russ cook and they're throwing all over the field, and then they just kind of went back to the you know, run on first and second down, and then let's have Russ make a play on third down, and, you know, it's just not working. And Schottenheimer is gone now, so we'll see where they go from there with their offensive coordinator. But you know, the Rams, and it's crazy, like Wolford was looking good in the beginning of the game. Like, he was kind of moving him down the field. And then when he gets hurt and Goff comes in, I'm like, oh shit. Like, this might be the worst possible thing to happen for someone who had money on the Rams. But, you know, their defense really did it. I mean, Goff, he made enough plays that he had to make. He didn't lose the game. Cam Akers was the best. So, just a solid solid team win for the Rams. And, you know, I think Seattle was kind of a little overvalued all year, to be honest, but, you know, they exit with a pretty poor performance on Saturday. The Bucs game, you know, it probably was better that Heinicke started from a spread standpoint, because he was the Bucs were getting a good rush on him, and he was able to kind of move around in the pocket, make some plays with his legs. Like, Smith would have been a sitting duck back there. Like, he would have been sacked at least three or four times that Heinicke kind of got out of the pocket and, you know, made those plays. And he definitely made himself some money for next year, whether it be with Washington or, you know, backup quarterback around the league. I don't quite remember him at Old Dominion. I think that was like before they became like an FBS school, but I guess he put up just an amazing like stat line in his college career. And he definitely showed flashes the other night. I mean, I don't think Tampa was like ever in danger of losing that game. But it was definitely competitive. So, you know, give credit to Washington, and, you know, the Bucs looked pretty good on offense, and they've definitely been kind of getting going recently with that. But, you know, maybe their defense is a little bit of a concern going forward. We'll see. But, you know, they just kind of withstood the challenge and advanced like you think they would have. And then on Sunday, yeah, again, Vrabel punting there on fourth down. I don't get these coaches. Like, I just don't understand it. And to the point that you guys were making earlier, all right, second and two, like, yeah, Derrick Henry's had a bad game. But honestly, if you hand it to him three times straight up the middle, he's going to get 1 yard two times, you know, like, all right, you get 1 yard on second down. Maybe you get stuffed on third down. Then you get 1 yard on fourth down, and then you keep the drive going. I mean, that was just so, so bad to punt in that spot. And then again, like, always in that scenario, the defense gets so deflated, and then Baltimore was like right back where they punted in two plays, basically. So, you know, I didn't think, you know, obviously the key play in that game was the huge run that Lamar had, because they had him dead to rights on that third down for another sack, and it would have been still 10-0 and Baltimore would have punted, or 10-3, one of the two. Instead, he breaks the run for the long touchdown, gets out of the pressure, and they go on to win. So, you know, impressive performance by the Ravens. I did like the Titans to keep it within 3.5. Maybe if Vrabel didn't punt there, they could have maybe won, or at least got it to a scenario where they lose by 3. I don't know. But, you know, that was definitely disappointing. But the Ravens certainly, you know, earned the win with their play after the slow start. And then, of course, the Bears and the Saints. Yeah, I mean, that drop by that guy, I forget his name, but the thing is he had a great catch on the play before, like, that was challenged on the sideline that stood. And then they do the trick play, and the dude is legit wide open. You remind me of for the Packers, Valdes-Scantling has at least one drop like that every game. Or every. And the guy for the Bears did the exact same thing, and that was just brutal. And any chance they had just kind of went out the window once that happened. You can't pass up an opportunity. And, you know, it's kind of the same thing we've seen from the Saints. I mean, their offense really isn't that explosive. They're just very efficient. They kind of dink and dunk their way down the field. And their defense is good enough to, you know, have 21 points be good enough to win. And it certainly was in this game. I mean, and that's kind of going to be their formula, I guess, going forward here. And then one last thing I'll mention about this game. When did they take out the rule that you don't have to kick an extra point or do a play at the end of the game? Because the Bears score on the very last play of the game, and then the game is over. Like, all right, I get it. If there's overtime and there's a touchdown, like, all right, you're done. But it's the last play of the game. You score a touchdown in regulation. You should have to do a play. Like, you should have to – remember the game with Arizona and Buffalo earlier in the year, the Hail Murray play? They took a knee on the extra point. I could be wrong that there might have been a second left.
There was a couple seconds left, I think.
Okay, well, then that's a different situation. But still, it's an end of regulation. It's still a regulation play. They should have had to have at least taken a snap and knelt down.
Yeah.
So if you had plus 11.5 there, you really got screwed.
Sorry, you mean it was that close? Like, it came down to that play? I forgot about that.
If you had plus 11.5, I had plus 10.5, right. And I was counting on them just going for a bullshit 2-point conversion just because.
Sure.
And then I see them walking off the field. I'm like, what the hell's going on here? So that was kind of
that's not cool.
Kind of disappointing. But,
yeah, it is. I was wondering why everybody was bringing that up, and I forgot that the lot was the line. I thought the line was 10.
Yeah, no, but it
but I guess it went up.
Yeah, by okay. game time it got, you know, there's some late money on the Saints, but you know, I wasn't expecting much from the Bears. I just thought their defense was going to be good enough. If you had told me before the game that the Saints were going to score 21 points, I would have said for sure the Bears were going to cover. Like, you can't even get 13 points or two touchdowns. Like, I would have thought for sure that the Bears would have covered 10.5 with the Saints at 21. So, that just serves me right for trusting Trubisky and Nagy. But, hey, great news, Bears fans. They're coming back next year, baby.
No doubt. And as I mentioned earlier, I think those of who were watching the game on Nickelodeon, I think actually got something out of the game because they were
the slime zone. That was pretty cool.
Was
and they
cool.
scored the touchdown. I mean, there weren't many touchdowns, so they couldn't really use it. They should use that for the Browns Chiefs game this weekend. We slime aplenty.
You'd be slipping all over the place with all that slime. Kicking field goals in SpongeBob's mouth. It was it's a fun afternoon. At least from that standpoint. The production was brilliant. The game was terrible, but overall, I thought the experiment was a really good success. I just don't know how it affected kids. I'm understanding that maybe it didn't really grab kids in the same way, but I thought they put a great effort into it. So let's go to this week and look at the divisional round. We have a very interesting slate of games, but I am seeing on the Action Network that the public is favoring some of these teams a little bit too much. I'll show you what I mean. We'll start with the NFC on Saturday afternoon. The Rams, number 6 Rams, will go to the number 1 Packers, who are off a bye. One of only two teams with bye weeks this year in the NFL. That's at 4:35 p.m. Eastern on Fox. This could be a really interesting battle because the Rams' defense is one of the best in the league, and the Packers certainly are pretty good with their offense. That's a good matchup. I think if Aaron Donald is healthy enough to play, and the same for Jared Goff, it'll be a very good game. The problem is we really don't know. They did say that Aaron Donald was good enough to start the game. I've not heard anything as far as Goff's thumb, so we really won't know until the game starts. And that's going to be interesting. AFC, this game could be fascinating. This is actually my favorite game of the schedule because the Ravens are playing with house money now. They finally got that playoff win for Lamar Jackson, number 5 Ravens. At the number 2 Bills, Bills certainly have a lot more in mind than just winning a playoff game. I think they want the Super Bowl, and they've got some fans in the stadium. I think that's going to be a good one. We'll see if the Bills get tested a little better on defense, like will their defense get tested better. That's at 8:15 on NBC Saturday night. Sunday, it's the number 6 Browns. You talk about house money. These guys are going to go against the number 1 Chiefs. I'll share my thoughts on all these, more detailed thoughts on these games in a moment. That's at 3:05 p.m. on CBS. And then following that, the Battle of the Aged Veterans. We're talking like really really highly experienced quarterbacks in Tom Brady of the number 5 Tampa Bay Bucks and Drew Brees of the number 2 Saints in the Superdome at 6:40 p.m. Eastern on Fox. I think all four of those games, well, 3 out of the 4, let's say, will be pretty good. The Browns game, No, I don't think so. And that's the thing. I'm really surprised that so many people are on the Browns plus 10. I mean, I'm looking at it. It's like 55%, and it could even go up. I think people have completely underestimated just how good the Chiefs actually are and how bad the Browns defense is. So to me, I'm not buying it. But let's get your guys' previews of the weekend of action. Andy, we'll go back to you. We'll get your thoughts on the divisional round.
Yeah, well, I think the angle with the Chiefs and the Browns is that who did the Chiefs play week 17?
Chargers. Anyone?
Chargers.
Yeah. Okay. And they lost. So don't count that game. But the Chiefs haven't covered in forever.
It's been a while.
Been a while. And they just kind of like struggled and, they let Atlanta hang around. They were winning without covering for a very long time. And were they bored? Were they bored? You know, who knows? Now they've just haven't really played a serious, it's going to be a while, like a long time till they played like an actual serious game when you factor in the bye. And then obviously with the Browns, they're trendy. Everyone is like, rah, rah, rah. So right now, Dave, I would say I would probably play the Browns with the if it is 10 or whatever, and you know, you get that backdoor potential because the Chiefs defense, it's not good. I mean, we've seen Derek Carr have amazing games against them. You've seen the Falcons being able to, even though that Falcons Chiefs game was a very low scoring game. It was kind of a strange game over Christmas weekend. So yeah, that's the one game where if we're looking at it now with like closing your eyes on paper, that could be the one game that could get away and turn it to a rout. And you know, Nance and Romo wouldn't want that, but you know, that's why you play the games. But Baltimore and Buffalo, I close my eyes and I'm seeing two teams that probably aren't going to, you know, run away from the other team. I can't see that game being a rout. I could see that game being either like 38-35 or 13-10, to be honest with you. Right now, I looked at the weather yesterday and there's potential for snow showers and wind. So who knows what's going to happen, but I'm looking forward to that game. It's going to be cold. Whether there's snow and wind remains to be seen. But if you gave me, like, strap me to the electric chair or the lie detector test, I would say, you know, let's go Baltimore because they're the slight underdog. Rams and Green Bay, I haven't Googled Jared Goff's thumb, so I have no idea about that, or if McVay is just going to play his tactical game and not announce who's starting until Saturday afternoon. But if it was Goff, I would be worried because he threw a lot of wobbling ducks against Seattle. Got away with it, but I think it's going to be harder to throw in a cold Lambeau Field because Seattle is like 45 degrees. It was pretty mild for January football. It's going to be cold in Green Bay. So if his thumb is banged up, his throws are not going to, you know, he's not going to throw pretty spirals if he does end up playing. Obviously, everyone's curious to see Devontae Adams versus Jalen Ramsey. I'm going to be curious with everybody else to see if Rodgers throws to Devontae Adams. I can't close my eyes and remember the last time Devontae Adams went up against like a quote-unquote shutdown corner. Usually, like, no one throws on Jalen Ramsey. So, but it's Devontae Adams. Like, you're going to have to throw to Jalen Ramsey. But Green Bay also has a few other very skilled receivers too. So that's going to be a very good matchup that I'm going to be looking forward to watch. I don't like betting against Aaron Rodgers at home in the cold. So I'm not going to bet against Aaron Rodgers in the cold. I'd rather lose, you know, if they don't cover the spread and I lose on Aaron Rodgers, that's okay. Because I'm not going to take Jared Goff or John Wolford on the road against Green Bay getting anywhere between 7 points or 10 points. I'm just not going to do it. And so, and Darnold, like you said, Dave, you know, he was laboring in the Seattle game for a while. So I don't know what the extent of the injury is. I'm sure he's still gimpy and it hurts him to breathe. So, you know, you guys to give a lot of respect to the Ram defense, but you know, Seattle's offense isn't on the same playing field as Green Bay. The Rams might try to slow the game down as best they can, but it's Aaron Rodgers. They have a great running game. LaFleur seems to have like taken his, you know, head coaching experience to another level from last year. And when push comes to shove, like I don't have faith in the Rams offense the way that they are right now to hang around with Green Bay, even if the Rams defense is putting up a great effort. Like, you know, the Rams running backs are kind of, they're not 100% healthy. Cup's not 100% healthy. So I think they just have a lot of question marks on offense. And then with respect to the Saints and the Bucks, I'll be rooting so hard for Tampa, guys, but you look at the first two games they had in the regular season, you know, week one, everyone said, well, Tampa just needs to gel. It's the first time Tom's haven't worked with these guys for, you know, ever, you know, shortened training camp, no preseason, and they didn't look very good. And then you look at that Sunday night game, I think it was like
38-3.
Yeah. And so you look at those two games and you're like, I don't know, like Tom and company, that offense didn't look good at all that second game. But then the other like cliche, which holds credence, is like, it's tough to beat a team three times in one regular season. So now that it's the playoffs, you know me, I'm not a big Saint fan. I like to fade them in January. And they didn't look great against the Bears a couple days ago. It's just the fact that the Bears offense was so bad. The Saints offense didn't really have to be that crisp to beat the Bears. As of now, I'm still going to bet Tampa. I think they're getting three, and I'll live or die with that bet. I think Tampa, they've definitely been trending in the right direction, but look at the teams that they've played in this run. I mean, they hapless teams, you know, the Lions, the Falcons twice, a Washington football team that arguably shouldn't have been in the playoffs. And then if you look at their schedule, you know, their 11 wins, I don't think a lot of those 11 wins have come against playoff teams. So they've beaten the teams that they should have beaten, and then they've lost, you know, they've lost to the Chiefs, they've lost to the Saints twice. They beat Green Bay, but that was a weird game too, because, you know, Aaron Rodgers threw a pick six. It was like, you know, Green Bay just had a disastrous like first half, and then Tampa never looked back. So it's about time Tampa, you know, beats a team that it's equal level, because they've taken advantage of that, you know, this six game run or whatever they've been on. It's been against bad teams. So, I'm hoping they can knock off Ass Clown and Company, but judging by the first two times they played, like, it doesn't bode well for them. But it's the playoffs, and you can just kind of say, you can also say, well, the first two times it doesn't matter. Like, what matters is now, and they have been playing better. You know, Antonio Brown is a factor. Gronkowski looks young again, and that Miller guy, I don't know his first name, but Brandon Miller maybe his name, but they look better. They look better offensively. But yeah, it's another step. It's a bigger step. And you worry about Brady with the pass rush, because if Brady is off and off his rhythm, he turns old man real quick. Mm-hmm.
That's like one thing about that Washington game that I thought was interesting. For as good as the defense was, and how for as well as the football team had been playing most of the year, I don't remember them getting a lot of pressure on Brady. Did you feel the same?
In the first half, it looked like Brady had plenty of time in the pocket.
Yeah.
But that's when Brady can be Brady. He almost – and it's a weakness at this point. Like, he needs that extra bit of time.
Yep, and he can't run.
He can't run, and he can't, like, if he's off his rhythm, like, even when he was, like, young Brady, the key to getting to Brady was to get him off rhythm. Like, certain quarterbacks, like, excel when they're out of rhythm.
Right.
Brady was never that guy. He's slow, and he's a pocket passer. He needs his time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And many have said he's the last of his kind, because everybody else is just rolling out of the pocket. You see it with Patrick Mahomes all the time, and you see it – and Rodgers does too, actually, to a smaller extent. So I'll just give you my quick hitters on these games, and then I'll pass off to John. But as far as where I'm leaning on these, I will lean the Saints reluctantly because they're home. I mean, it's still, even after all this time, I still think it's tough to beat them at the Dome, even though it's already happened a couple times in recent years. The Rams did it. Who else did it? Can't remember, but someone else did in recent times. And I don't know. I'll be the Yachts, and I'll take the Chiefs -10. You're right about that Baltimore game. I have no idea. That one's going to be interesting. And as far as the Packers, I'm going to give it to John, and let's get your thoughts of the weekend.
Yeah, definitely excited for the game to come on Saturday. Hoping they don't come out like the Steelers. My God, if it's 28-0 in the first quarter, I'm just going to lose it. But
I don't think
it will. I don't think it will be. You know, the Packers, they haven't, you know, it's always the whole number one offense versus number one defense matchup. I mean, I definitely respect the Rams' defensive front and their defensive players. The Packers' offense is just such in a rhythm right now. Like, I don't think it really matters. You know, the Rams are going to get their stops for sure, and they're going to make their plays. But I just think they're on such a good, the floor has such a good game plan, and they're just so in sync with everything that they can put up 27, and you know, they could look like they're struggling, is what I'm saying, and still put up like 24 to 27 points, and that should be good enough to win this game. I think the few times Goff has played in the cold, it has not gone well. I remember a game in Chicago. I believe it was either last year or the year they went to the Super Bowl. It was on a Sunday night, and he just looked awful in that game. And not to mention his thumb, if it's obviously it's still bothering him, and that's not a good recipe for a cold weather kind of environment. I do think the Rams' game plan here obviously is going to be to try to get after Rodgers with some pressure. Not having David Bakhtiari at left tackles, that's a huge loss. But I think they can kind of scheme, you know, to do some double teams with tight ends or just some chip blocks. So I think they can, so they can't just go one-on-one protection, which is what you want if you're doing like multiple receiver sets and whatnot. But I think LaFleur is smart enough to go a game plan by game plan basis to kind of account for that loss. So I think they'll be able to be okay with that. You know, the Rams could be able to run the ball a little bit if they stick with Akers to kind of control the game and keep Rodgers off the field. But again, it might run into the same problem that, you know, I'm sure Tennessee had that same game plan a couple weeks ago, but Packers got out ahead. And, you know, once it's like 13 or 14 to nothing, well, there goes that idea. And, they could the Tannehill had to pass, and now if Goff is playing from behind, it's just not going to work out well for them. I do think the Green Bay defense has been playing better second half of the year. They're starting to get some pressure. They signed Snacks Harrison, and that's, you know, to kind of like a run stuffer. So I do worry, like, sometimes they get a little too conservative, like playing off of receivers. But, you know, all this talk about Jalen Ramsey, like Jair Alexander has been rated like one of the top cornerbacks in the NFL all season. So the Packers have a shutdown corner of their own. So, I think the Packers offense is just good enough to, overcome what the Rams defense is going to throw at them. And I think they'll win this game. Like the spread, I don't know. It seems like when I was guessing what the spread was going to be, I figured it would be around a touchdown. So I really don't see a lot of maybe value taking them with the -7. I am going to do a teaser though. And I mentioned this to Andy off the air. So I think this one is, you know, you got to put this one in. So I already did it. So it's Green Bay -1, Baltimore +8.5, and Bucks +9. It's a 3-team, 6-point teaser that I already put in. Now, obviously, I'll do some of the other bets here and there, but I think that's the main play I'm going to make this weekend, or I have made for this weekend. So to carry that. So I think Green Bay will win basically, whether they get the spread or not is, you know, irrelevant for that bet. So to move on to the next game, Baltimore and Buffalo. Now the Bills, they can't run the ball at all. Their running game is essentially Josh Allen, unlike these quarterback runs. I mean, their running game is not good. We saw Baltimore really stuff Tennessee's running game, but so again, like Buffalo really doesn't run it. So I don't know if that's more of a strength or a weakness that they really can't take away to begin with. So I do think what we saw from the Colts, the Ravens can have some success with their run game against the Bills, and I think their defense is you know, we got to see if their secondary can match. The matchup to watch in this one is Diggs against Peters. That's the matchup you want to watch for this, for the cornerback wide receiver matchup. You know, I saw Lamar Jackson's comments about, you know, he's never played in snow before. He hopes it doesn't snow. So that's kind of something to keep an eye on. I don't know if he's not going to want to, you know, it's going to be a kind of a shell shock thing for him having to play in a snowy environment. But I think overall, this line is probably right. You know, you give the Bills a couple points for home field. They are going to have some fans there just for the conditions. But, you know, pretty even teams. Again, like, so I just love the Ravens with the teaser spot in this scenario. Like, this is just going to be a close game. And I think this will be a pretty low-scoring game. If we've seen what the Ravens like to do, they like to control the game with their running game and their defense. So I think I saw the over-under was 50. Like, oh, man, I'm way under on that. Like, I think this is going to be, like, 24-21 mm-hmm. or 20-17, honestly. I know the Bills' offense has been great, but just the style of play the Ravens have, I like the under for this. So – and then again, you take that. I'll talk about obviously the Bucs and the Saints, the third part of my teaser. Again, I think again under here too, under 52. That's way too high for these two teams. And the way that the first two matchups went, I mean, the Bucs front seven is excellent. Kamara is not going to do anything. So the Saints are going to have to win this with their dink and dunk passing that they do. You know, short passes to Thomas, to Sanders. You know, I'm sure they'll get Kamara involved in the passing game. And then they can get the pressure on Brady, like you guys were talking about, to kind of throw him off his spot. So I think this is, again, another close, low-scoring game. I'll say Saints by 3, but, again, that's just going to, you know, make my teaser even more enticing. I think that's – I mean, I could be a sucker for taking that, but I think that's, like, the bet you want to make this weekend. So, I think this is like a 24-21 kind of game. Mm-hmm. I guess I'll give the edge to the Saints just a little bit. But they have been known for some pretty epic – playoff collapses as you've seen in recent years. So who the heck knows what's going to happen with this one. And then the Browns and the Chiefs, I think you have to like the over.
Yeah, oh, these two teams. You like the over in this one.
Yeah. I mean, it's high for a reason. I mean, the Browns defense isn't very good. The mm-hmm. Chiefs defense has been, as we've seen, it can be exploited. I mean, the Browns and coverage are just awful.
And
their linebackers too. And I could see Kelsey having like 15 catches in this game. So both of these teams are going to score. I think for the spread, I do kind of like the Browns. I mean, I don't know. I guess there is something to be said for the Chiefs just kind of half-assing it over the second half of the season, knowing that they were going to win the division. But at the same time, like, they didn't know the Steelers were going to end up collapsing. So they were still in the hunt for like the one, like, it was a battle for the one seed there until the last couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. But I do think they just kind of really just didn't try all that hard in some of these games. So that does worry you a little bit. They're going to come out like their hair on fire with this game. But I think the Browns offense is good enough to put up 30 points or 28 points, which should be good enough to cover. And the way they run the ball too, I mean, that's the one big weakness on the Chiefs is their run defense. And they got Chubb and Hunt are just the best combo in the NFL. And they just sub those guys in and out. And, you know, I think this will be close. So, and maybe, again, maybe a sucker's bet, but I like the Browns plus 10 and the over. And then that teaser that I mentioned, I think that's where I'm going with my question for this weekend. Four great games, though. I think as long as we got rid of the Bears, Washington, those are the two teams we needed to get rid of. Every other potential matchup was pretty good for this weekend.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, even the Rams, even though it seems like that's an ugly team, their defense is fun to watch, and their coverage has been great. Jalen Ramsey did play a pretty nice game. I mean, Andy talked about that a little bit in his recap segment. But, man, we are not seeing eye-to-eye this week. I will tell you, I like the under in the Chiefs game. The thing about my reason for taking the Chiefs in that scenario is really because I felt like the Browns had such an extraordinary moment winning, and not only winning, but just taking down their division rival, their hated division arch nemesis, the Steelers. I just can't think of what they'd even have left to bring against, you know, a road game against Patrick Mahomes. I mean, it's just, you know, Andy talks about don't bet against Aaron Rodgers all the time, but I feel similarly about Patrick Mahomes. Like, do you really want to bet against Patrick Mahomes? I don't know. But the points about the defense are valid because the Chiefs defense is not good. It has not been good. And as you mentioned, John, particularly the run defense, bad. It is bad. In fact, it's so bad that, John, I can imagine the two of us are going to be leaning towards some of those Browns guys in our FanDuel, yeah?
Oh, yeah. That's the game you want to stack for sure. It's the Chiefs-Browns game. I mean, but then again, like, you look at it and it's like, all right, well, if everyone's going that way, like, all right, maybe I'll be contrarian with one guy from, you know, from the Rams-Packers game. Like, maybe I'll go with Cam Akers, you know, like, I don't know. Yeah, I saw he was kind of lower priced. So, yeah, I think the you're playing FanDuel, at least for our small little contest. I mean, the Browns and Chiefs game is where you want to go for this weekend, definitely.
Yeah, for sure. So your teaser idea is really good. And I feel like the best part of that is the Baltimore part. Like, any way you can get that to 8.5 just feels great. Like, you know, you have a touchdown margin for either team. I just feel like that's the kind of game it's going to be. I don't think either team's going to win by more than that.
Well, they say the rules for teasers, and you learn some things as you do more betting, but you shouldn't tease through zero.
No,
you always tease through 3-7. Yeah, you never – so, like, if you were going to do – like, don't do Saints plus 3. Like, right. Go the other way like I did. You do Bucks plus 9. So you tease through 3, 7, and 10. You never tease through zero.
Absolutely.
Sorry, I just got it because I always forget. So if you tease a team to 9, plus 9, they lose by 9. Doesn't matter if it's a 2-team teaser, 3-team teaser, 4-team teaser. It's a loss. That's why it's called a teaser, correct?
Interesting. I did like almost a teaser every week this year, and I don't think I recall I ever had a push. I'd have to go back and look on the records. So I'm not sure how – if it's just like graded from – if you do a 4-teamer and one pushes – like the plus 9 and it just knocks it down to a 3-teamer, or I'm not sure if it grades it.
Happened to me. It basically renders it a push, so it just turns your team it just turns it into a 2-team teaser. And then you just get whatever the odds would have been for the remaining two teams.
I thought maybe they change it, or it depends on the book, like the very stipulation of it being a teaser is like if it hits on the number, like if you tease Jets-Pats to Jets plus 17 and they lose by 17, it's a loss. But I don't know.
I will double check that. I mean, certainly we've all done so many parlays and teasers in the last year or so that I tend to mix them up. So I'll confirm that at some point. But I thought that's how it worked. I thought that was the scenario. Who knows? But on the teaser itself, Andy, you have any ideas for teasers this coming weekend?
No, I'm going to piggyback that teaser that John's been talking about.
Good one.
The only risk is not to jinx it, is like you get it confirmed and loaded now, and then like heaven forbid, like someone like Mahomes doesn't get the COVID or something like that. But that's gambling in 2021.
Yeah.
You never know. But no, I'm taking that. And I mean, if you really want to get bold, you throw in Browns plus 16, that's why they call it teaser. You just whenever I do the money line parlays while I'm making it, I'm just like, you could do a side wager on like which team's going to screw you over. So last week when I had Bama money line, Tampa money line, Baltimore money line, and Steelers money line, I was like, one of these teams is going to screw the pooch. It's probably not going to be Alabama, but we know.
Yeah. It's kind of in a similar vein. I remember one time I did this. If you remember the episode where I had like an 18 bones to win one bone, I tased a whole bunch of stuff. Well, all right, I parlayed a whole bunch of stuff, and obviously it didn't work. But there was one time where I had a parlay like that, a money line parlay. But instead of like what I did was I just took the underdogs of every single team in that parlay, like in the money line parlay. So basically fading the favorites in each team against the spread in each of those. And it kind of worked, but it doesn't work all the time. It's just an interesting idea. Like, it's very similar to what you were talking about. Because you have to balance, like, how much the money line parlay pays out versus what the payout, like, how much you have to invest in, like, the other teams, right? So, as you said, you can only really do one or two teams out of that parlay. You can't do them all because then you're putting in, like, 5 units on it. then what's the parlay going to do, you know? But, okay, so that was it as far as our gambling angle here. Any other thoughts you had as far as the divisional round, Andy? We can go to final thoughts after.
Divisional round that we just went through. No, I'm looking forward to the games. Obviously, I'm down with Super Wild Card Weekend. Usually, this is the time of year where I'm watching. Like, I'll go to a movie because Oscars are coming up, and Wild Card Weekend there's usually just two games. So Dave, you and I could go to like a movie at 10 a.m. on a Saturday, and then get situated for the first Wild Card game. But because of COVID and because of the extra game, no movies this weekend or last weekend.
Yeah. Oh, really quickly, do you have any thoughts on the Sony Open, Andy?
I'm sure John and I and you, we all have thoughts on it. I wish I had more time in the world. I would have gotten in John's golf league, but I'm already in a one and done league, and I also gamble basically on every round for all the events. So just too much to allocate. I am high on Charles Howell III to finish in the top 10 because out of the 19 times he's played the Sony, he's finished in the top 10, 10 times, and he's plus 300 to get in the top 10. And then Kevin Kinsner is also, he is the horse for that course. So I kind of like him to, you know, flirt up on that leaderboard. And I would not, if you're in a one and done league, I don't know, I wouldn't take like Colin Morikawa or Webb Simpson or Daniel Berger or Hideki because I don't like wasting like top guns until, you know, the first, until Hawaii and Palm Springs is off the map. And then once the like LA Open and Phoenix Open, then you can maybe, because there's not like, I think there's 35 events this year. So I wouldn't waste the top guns in January.
Oh, I gotcha. So it's a little bit like a survival pool and then NFL, I guess. You pick the team.
Yeah, one and done league in the golf. It's exactly like that, Dave. Okay. You use a guy, you can't use him the rest of the year. And depending on the league you're in, it's like obviously whoever shoots the lowest to par that weekend wins. But if you're in a season long cumulative race, some team, you know, some commissioners will do the FedEx points season long. Some people will do like the money list. But if you do the money list, then you got to be careful with the Tour Championship because the Tour Championship winner is like $10 million to the winner. So you want to like maybe you just do 10% of that. Mm. You just got to tinker it out. So, but it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, sounds like fun. And I know
I got in one of those this year too, in addition to the one that I'm doing for my first time doing a one and done. So it's definitely an interesting strategy. So who did you say you're going with this week for your one and done? Charles Howell, right?
I did Howell. I bet Howell top 10, but now I changed it to Abraham Answer.
Okay. He's a good pick. It's awful. Like I'm doing this, the league that I'm running, the one and done, and then I got into this like DraftKings season long kind of league where you do a DraftKings lineup every week. And it's actually a really cool setup. You play against, there's 144 players in the league. So it's essentially like its own mini like PGA Tour. And where you finish each week in the standings, you get the corresponding FedEx Cup points for each tournament. So it's a really cool setup. And I just spent way too much time analyzing and looking into stuff. Like I almost wanted to play every person in the field by the end of look, reading and looking at stuff. So I had to stop. But for my one and done this week, I went with Sungjae Im. So
I was thinking Sungjae too, because he is such an odd, like, you close your eyes, you can just picture him posting like 4 under, 5 under every round. But I don't want to wait. Like, I feel like I'd be wasting him now.
See, that's the thing. Yeah, yeah. Well, Matsuyama, no way. Like, I had him last week in my pool. He was awful. Like, he lost like 6 strokes putting. Like, there's just something not right with that guy. Yeah. I'm off of him for a long time. But it should be, I mean, you can't go wrong with these tournaments that, you know, in Hawaii, at least for us East Coast people, you just put the game on it or put the golf on at night. You can't beat it.
Yeah.
Correct.
It's really fun. Like I'm in John's pool as we talked about, and I'm looking forward.
Oh yeah, no, Andy would enjoy this one. Like so, how it works is I separate every golfer in the field by betting odds, and I group them into six different groups. So you have to take one golfer from each group, so you kind of get a little bit of the entire flavor of the field. So this week, the last group, oh my God. There's like 30 players in there. It's really rough. Like you have to be like I was looking at like driving accuracy stats from like three correlated tournaments to try to find my player to pick from that group. I realize you're picking like, you know, there's like Vijay Singh's in there, Mike Weir, guys that have like never haven't made like missed 10 cuts in a row. Like I'm just looking for someone to make the cut out of that group. And I think I found someone that has played the tour last year and at least made some cuts. So I think that's all I'm trying to shoot for that.
Yeah. How did you, because this is your baby. So like, yeah. What's your criteria that like between like A group, B group and like a mediocre field. And then like, you know, if it's, you're like, you're Larry Mize group.
So what I did, I just take the betting odds, like right from, you know, Bovada, DraftKings, wherever you want to go. So I just cut it off at a certain point where I think it's fair to go to the next groups. Like for example, the first group this week is only seven players. I'll just quickly read it to you. So the first group this week is Morikawa, Berger, English, Matsuyama, Neiman, Im, and Simpson. So those seven guys are like the top players in the field. So those are your first group. And then it goes down from there. And then obviously the last few groups have more players in them because there's not that much of a difference between like guys that are 150 to one to 200 to one. You can just kind of all group them together. So,
That makes sense.
Yeah. And I do the so for each group, like if your guy makes the cut, you get his prize money. So it's the same as the one and done kind of pool.
John, you got to tell Andy about the one guy in our pool that picked the winner last week.
Yeah. It was crazy because you figured like there'd be a ton of duplicates between everybody. There's only 40 players. You're picking from the six groups. There's only like six or seven players in each group. And one person had Harris English and he won it. So he's off to a good start, but I have the prize money separated in like 9 week segments. So the first nine tournaments, who's ever in first at the end of that is going to get the payout. So, you know, he could end up being in last place at the end of the 9 weeks. We'll see what happens. So I haven't looked at any of the picks, so I don't look at the picks until, you know, the tee off time, because I have to do my own picks, so that wouldn't be fair to everyone. So I'm gonna be very interested to see what people take for that last group, Dave. I can only imagine some of the responses.
I know. Oh, it's gonna be wild. Oh boy.
Oh yeah, it's gonna be crazy. Like I said, there should be double points if someone makes the cut from that. It's just crazy.
Davis Love the Third is in that group.
If he was the only person to take, I would put zero. I would never take him.
Oh, too good. All right, John, let's give it back to you for final football thoughts.
Oh yeah, no, like I said, this is like divisional weekend is like the last like true football weekend of the year, and we're gonna have four great games. So that's all you can ask for on paper, anyway. I mean, a couple of them might end up being a blowout, but you know that's sports for you. So it should be a great weekend, and definitely looking forward to it. And I'm biased, but you know, really would like the Packers to win and host an NFC title game for the first time in forever. I think the last one was Favre's last game against the Giants, and he floated a duck out there in overtime, and they went to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I think you're right. It has been a while. Yeah.
Yeah, every game Rodgers has played in has been on the road for the NFC Championship. So it'd be nice for him to finally play one.
This is the first home playoff game for him, like, at all?
Oh, no. He's had, like, wild card games and divisional games. I'm talking NFC Championship. He has not played one at home.
Oh, okay. Right. That's true. I remember that. Very wild. Well, we'll see what happens this weekend. Let's go to Andy, and let's give you the last word.
Yeah, I just saw on the score ticker on this Texas Tech game that Kyle Flood, former Rutgers head coach, has been named Texas offensive coordinator. So he'll be joining Steve Sarkisian's staff. Kyle, we'll go right. go Rutgers. But I don't know, like, you guys probably know, but I don't know Kyle Flood's pedigree before, like, the Rutgers head coaching job. So it's like some of these coaches that are just, like, extremely overwhelmed at a head coaching position and don't have a lot to work with, like, when they get downgraded to either, like, DC or OC, like, at a more at a school where there's more talent around him and he's not tasked with head coach responsibilities, they can thrive again. I mean, just look at Steve Sarkisian again.
Are you can't be buying this either, right? Because John and I were not big on that move.
Oh, Texas being back? No, because the problem with Texas is that, like, number one, they have no patience. No school has patience at this point. Like, if Texas doesn't get to a playoff in, like, 3 years, like, number one, it's not realistic. Number two, like, the administration's going to be like, well, what the hell? Like, 8-4 isn't good enough for Texas anymore. No. But 8-4 is, like, what they should actually sign up for. And Herman probably didn't handle himself that. Herman comes across as kind of a dick. In some of the games this year, they, like, that Iowa State game, for example, was just a blunder. But Texas, the thing about Texas is that their admin building or their admin athletic department, they expect a lot from their head coaches, and I don't know, ever since Mac Brown left, they just haven't really clicked. No patience. They have no patience.
Yeah, you're right. I think that's just it's kind of how much of that is Nick Saban's fault? It's not even his fault. I'm just saying, like, because people are trying to be Bama, is that some of the causation of that? I don't know, but you're right. It's kind of, I think people just have too high expectations. I just don't see Texas ever being that good, and I kind of felt similarly about some of these other Big 12 schools. I mean, they're the only one that can realistically ever be that consistently good as Oklahoma. But look at them. Have they made a national championship game in the last, like, 15 years? No. So after all that, they still haven't even made it there. So, you know, kind of appreciate what you have, I guess, is my thought. Guys, this has been fun. Nothing more for me to say. I think this will be a good weekend as well. Enjoy all the games, and good luck with all your bets. I hope that your teaser plays out, John. That looks like a good teaser.
Yeah, I'm feeling it looks good on paper, so we'll see what happens.
Mm-hmm. All right, guys, all the best and best wishes, and hopefully you get back at your apartment, your condo at some point, Andy.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's worse places to be, but congratulations on winning the John Wood season-long NFL pool. It's a good tournament to win, and so you'll be a marked man next year.
Dave, you're right.
You are going to be, exactly. I don't know. I have to stack your division with some tough players for next year. Not to say that you weren't with tough players, but you're going to be a target on your back for sure.
No,
so
definitely. Yeah,
congratulations again. That was great. We'll see if your luck carries over to golf. I'm going to look at your group six pick tomorrow morning, and we'll see if we're on.
It's a shot in the dark, I'll tell you that.
I am not allowing you back in the pool, Dave.
We'll see. Well, thanks, guys. I appreciate it. All right. Well, until next time, I'll talk to you guys soon. Take care, guys.
All right. Good luck, everyone.
Sounds good.
Good luck, everybody. All right, everybody. That's the show. That's Andy. That's John. And this is Dave. Thank you very much once again for tuning into our program. We hope you've enjoyed it. And we'll be off for a few days. I think we could be back on Tuesday for our NBA report. And you may hear from me on other programs in the near future. So if you've missed any of our programs, please give us a gander and listen to some of our back episodes over on digcow.com, or you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Dave in the City Out West. Here on YouTube, if you're watching the feed visually, our YouTube channel also has our last few episodes from the fall. We've been doing doing this since then. Have a good weekend. Enjoy the football. We'll see you next time.